Hello, hello, hello. This is Idaho Bo, and
Vivacious Vic.
for another show of Down and Dirty. And today we are talking about permaculture. And we're going to do things a little bit different. We've had great guests a couple of times, Don Newsom from BBS Radio, and our great friend Matt Denning in Boise, Idaho, have been guests on our show, and they're very permaculture minded. So we're going to go a little bit more into depth about permaculture today. Before we get started, I just would like to thank BBS Radio for being great hosts and always being there for our questions and suggestions. And also, if you find our content interesting and something that you can utilize in your life, please subscribe to our channel. We would greatly appreciate it. You can find a place to subscribe on bbsradio.com/down and dirty. Scroll down a bit and you'll find a little button. We would greatly appreciate it. All right, Vic, are you ready to get down and dirty about permaculture?
I'm ready.
The reason we're doing it this way, and I'm asking Vicky the questions today, is she's actually certified in permaculture. She has a certificate from, she'll have to remind me the name of where she got certified in Colorado. I am a proponent of permaculture and I use practices in my life, but we thought we'd have some fun with this today. So, Vic, here we go. So, your certification, I feel, is a great achievement. What inspired you to dive into permaculture in the first place, and what was the moment that hooked you?
Back in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, when I still had my landscape garden business, I've always been an organic gardener and had gardens everywhere. But permaculture came across my radar screen somehow, and I immediately got interested and started reading about what it really is. And also at that time, I just adopted it right off the bat because when I read about some of the experiences and the experimental sites that the Mollison, his name was Mollison in New
Bill
Zealand, and
Mollison.
Bill Mollison is the discoverer or initiator of permaculture. I loved everything I read about it and started adapting small things in my life to that. I went to Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute at 7,200 feet in Colorado, Basalt, Colorado. He is still doing that. Oh, that was a long time, like 97, 97, 98. And he's still very, very big with his classes every year. 2-week class that you sign up for. I love what permaculture is all about because it's all about adding to what is already naturally occurring. And that makes sense on every single level. You're not trying to change things to suit a single or a couple different motivations, but you are adding to what the natural landscape already provides. You don't diminish or destroy it. You actually work with everything present on a piece of property. So I was hooked immediately. Go ahead.
Alrighty, so along that line, what is the biggest myth or misconception about permaculture that you'd love to bust for our listeners? Maybe something that makes people think it's too hard or not for them.
The biggest myth about permaculture and many gardening practices is that you have to work harder. No, permaculture, you're working with what is already natural. And you are adapting to nature rather you trying to force nature to adapt to your situation. That is the biggest myth around so many garden practices.
Alrighty. So let's ask you another question. What was the most surprising lesson you learned from your permaculture course? Something that shifted how you see nature or your role in it?
Two things. One, the number one was the composting toilet. There were 20 people living on this, and we had one outhouse. There was some in the house, but we were all directed to use the composting toilet, and we learned how to do it. And so the greatest thing that I discovered, I'd never seen anything like it, was the red wiggler worms that do the composting for us. And the byproduct of that is one of the most nutrient-rich fertilizers that we can make. And the other thing was witnessing how common farm animals, especially the chickens and those red wigglers, how they do all the work for us. They compost, they fertilize, they dig, they do pest control, well, especially the chickens. And those two things really shifted my consciousness to a place of work smarter, not harder. And that is
Exactly.
all what permaculture is all about.
So, going back to the composting toilet, I live in the city, so I don't have one, but I've utilized them before. And after you leave your deposit, the ones I've seen is you put in sawdust, and then that drops down into a bin, and then you take that out to the red wigglers, right? I know you have w red wigglers, and I also know you don't have a composting toilet in your house. But what is the byproduct of human waste called? And can you tell us a little bit about it?
It's called humanure.
Human manure. Oh my goodness.
I
This
mean,
isn't that
let's just be
creative?
simple.
Yeah. So human manure, like you told us before on a previous show that your mom used to use it.
It used to be legal in Boise,
Yeah.
and I don't know the whole history of that and where it was produced and how you got it, but she got it. And we w when I was first learning that, we used that all over our property.
I know, and a lot of I can just hear a lot of our listeners going, ew,
No.
because you know me, guys, pun intended, we've been fed a crock of shit about human manure, and oh, it's full of bacteria, you're gonna get typhus or whatever the heck they say you get from it. But it's actually, if you look through history, it's been used throughout our history, human history, as a fertilizer for crops. And you actually get very luscious strawberries, et cetera, from using that. So that's a good myth buster right there. I appreciate that one. So what is one simple permaculture practice that you've adopted that make a big difference? It's kind of tying into the last question. And how could our listeners try it in their own spaces, no matter how small?
Well, you and I both utilize chop and drop, and chop and drop is when you're growing some species of plants that capture nutrients, especially, well, the one I use is comfrey right now. The one that was prevalent at the permaculture site in Colorado was a pea shrub. And pea shrub is a nitrogen fixer, like peas and beans are in our urban gardens. And when you chop that and drop it as a mulch, it mulches and helps retain moisture, but it also fertilizes as it decomposes. And I just did a huge amount of comfrey and put it all around all my pepper plants, tomato plants, bok choy, tomatillos and everything. And I didn't exhaust even a fragment. We've got a lot of comfrey growing.
You grow it underneath your apple trees, correct?
We grow comfrey underneath our not citrus, but our orchard trees. And there's a symbiotic relationship, which I haven't scientifically studied, but many, many organic gardeners use plant country or comfrey underneath their fruit trees. And it deters pests, and it helps fertilize and strengthen resistant to, so it's a very powerful herb and
I
plant.
shared a video, a YouTube video with Vicky a couple weeks ago about comfrey because she grows it. And I shared it with my nephew too because he has it. It's growing all over his 5 acres up north from me. And one of the reasons I shared it with my nephew is because he raises sheep and goats and chickens. And comfrey can also be used as fodder for your livestock. It's just got multiple uses. The ancients called it bone knit because it can actually heal broken bones. I use comfrey in a healing balm for your skin that I make. I add red clover, knapweed, and plantain to it. I call it Bo's Boo Boo Be Better, and it's very healing and soothing for your skin. Comfrey is a miracle herb, and we will do a show on herbs, probably more than one, because there's a lot to say about herbology. But again, this ties into permaculture practices. So let's ask another question, Vicky. What is a common challenge people face when starting permaculture, and what advice would you give to help them overcome and keep going?
What I find in my experience over the years is people have to overcome their own resistance to making a commitment to make a lifestyle change. Because a lot of the things that you and I are involved with and trying to help people learn is gardening and growing your own food and beginning to maintain a sustainable lifestyle. It requires us to probably make some changes in our lifestyle and our time commitment. Gardening is a time commitment, and the more you grow, the more time it takes. And so to me, it's about learning how to leave the system that we all live in. If we live in a city, if we live it, really, it's a global thing, not just US, not just cities, but it's a global thing of leaving the systems that aren't sustainable at all. If you're dependent on going to the grocery store for every bit of food that you have, that is a dependency that we have to start chipping away at. And that's what gardening helps you do. It helps you get into more of a natural rhythm of the seasons, of the sun and the day and the night, and also the nature provides everything for us. So the closer we get to it, the more we learn about practices that can help feed us and sustain a lifestyle different. But it's a commitment to be willing to leave the system that's in place right now.
One of the ways I find that helps me break that system is leaving my freaking phone at home when I go outside. I do live in an apartment, and if you listen to any of our previous shows, you know I have a plethora of pots in my front yard. to the chagrin of a couple of my neighbors, but so be it. But when I go out and walk my dog or I go to the forest, I leave my phone at home. And sometimes I go, dang, I wish I had my phone because I want to take a picture. Well, that just tells me I probably need to get a small camera to take with me instead. But leave the devices at home and just try to be out in nature as much as possible. That's my device, or that's my advice anyway. All right, let's dream big for a moment. If you could design a permaculture community from scratch, what would it look like, and how would it bring people together?
Well, I've already designed, to the best of my ability, a permaculture site here where I live. And I have invited over the years and had a little bit of success several years ago. It's been at least six, of having some people volunteer to come help weed, and the payment for that would be a share of produce. But I am finding that people say, oh, yes, I would really like to get involved in that and come and help you do some things. The time commitments with people are very fragile because people are so busy working and raising families, and so for me, it goes back to the answer of that previous question is, what do you want to make a commitment to in order to start including some of these practices into your life? You have to make room for bringing new practices in. It's just like the old thing. If I'm going to buy something new, I need to get rid of something that I'm not using. It's the same kind of mindset. Make room. That means you have to stop doing something else to make room, even if it's an hour, even if it's a half an hour. Some people don't even have a half an hour to go out without their devices and sit in nature or weed their garden or plant a pot. To me, that's very sad.
So
But
one of the th I'm sorry, go ahead.
it is the truth of our living situations right now.
So, one of the things that this question about designing a permaculture community from scratch brings to my mind, let's go back to the Ringing Cedars books, to Anastasia and her kin's domains, where she first brings in the individual and their land, the individual, their family. Because she's all about having a family domain. That's what a kin's domain is. It's actually one husband and wife or single person will start the property to 2 hectares, as she says, which I don't know if that translates to like 5 acres. I can't remember. Regardless, and then it's handed down through the generations. So it's the kin, the family domain. And so she speaks about how to place things on your land, but then she talks about having a whole village like this, and then the village pretty much shares everything. They're symbiotic with each other. So I'd like to, Vic, at some point maybe dig into the Ringing Cedars a little bit more.
Okay.
But when you have like-minded people, when you start a community, for me anyways, it needs to be intentional, and you need to have a goal, or have things in common that you want to address and to achieve. And so building a community on permaculture practices just seems like a natural thing to do to me. All right, let's move on. If you could share one permaculture principle to make the world a better place, which would you choose and why does it feel so powerful to you?
I think the one thing that people need to understand is that you got to work smarter, not harder. Because when you start to incorporate permaculture practices into your little garden or your big property, it means working with nature. It doesn't mean changing the property to become a monoculture field or something. It means that you observe what's already present on your property, what animals, what birds, what insects naturally occur on your property, and are they an enhancement or are they taking away? And how do you work with those things? Where's the water? Where does, if you've got a creek or a pond or a little swampy area or something. How does that contribute to what's going on your property? And how can you enhance that so that it is that full tilt, incorporating. When I was up at my permaculture training, there's always, when you're getting your training, you always do a design. That's part of getting your certificate, is you do a design. So we paired off into, I think at that point there were three of us doing a design, and he was wanting to design a riparian zone by putting in a pond. And so we needed to we so you take into the consideration where the sun comes up during the entire year because of the north-south migration of the sun across the sky. You take into consideration what trees are there, what's shady, what's sunny, where does the water flow into the pond and where does it flow out of the pond? And so this is what you do on any site that you are wanting to incorporate permaculture practices. If you live in a place that's really shrubby and kind of a slopy hillside or something, one of the examples that I was really intrigued by was somebody wanted to they bought some land and then they wanted to figure out, well, what are we going to do? What do we want to do? And it was a natural migration and habitat for wild turkeys. Well, what did they do? They started raising turkeys that could free range. And I mean, that's the type of thing. It was a quail and a wild turkey habitat. Naturally. So they incorporated practices and some cages and things like that to be able to manage. So you'd look at it from that perspective. So instead of going in and wanting to bear, just
Redo everything.
redo it, no, you incorporate what's already going on in a property. That's the biggest part of permaculture. Is using what's already naturally available and enhancing that, adding to it, and making that work towards your goals.
That's kind of like you were saying earlier, work smarter, not harder. So when you work with
Absolutely.
nature
Yeah.
instead of against it, which like it brings me back to when you were talking about how you were so intrigued with xeriscaping and how that's actually working a lot. That's a lot smarter because it uses less water. You're in a desert, you're in an upper desert,
Yeah.
and people just didn't want to have it. They wanted their English gardens with all the beautiful flowers, which don't get me wrong, I love. When I lived in Wales, that was the absolute perfect place for that. And it was in the UK, so I guess it's not quite an English garden, but it was an Englishman I was living with. So anyway, it's working with what you have, not against it. Yeah, that's great. Okay, I'm gonna ask you a real fun one now. So let's see. If permaculture was a superhero, What would its superpower be, and what kind of funky costume would it rock to save the world?
Oh,
Oh,
I don't know. I have an answer to that one.
you haven't answered that one. All right, let's move on. So what exactly is permaculture? How would you explain it to a curious 10-year-old or a skeptical grandparent? And bonus points if you can make it sound like the coolest adventure ever.
Well, one of the thoughts that I came up with is, how about we grow the psilocybin mushrooms? And this kind of goes back into the this kind of goes back into the other question. And I have a my superhero is Jimi Hendrix, and he comes and he It's on that property. That's not really for a 10-year-old, but anyway, it's like do what feels right for you. This is the thing. Find your joy in what you love and do that. Incorporate that first and foremost. It can be, there's no limit. You know, if you want to put a few rabbit hutches and grow some rabbits, right? They fertilize, they
Well,
feed you.
really, really fast. They fertilize,
They
they
fertilize and
fertilize
they
each other really
reproduce,
fast.
you know? And I mean, it's just figuring out what you love. Nature provides so many beautiful things for us. So have fun with it and pick something that you love. Doesn't have to
Okay.
be complicated.
So, I've been gardening for many, many years, and not everything I've always tried has been successful. But, we learn from our mistakes. So let's talk about fails because we all have them. What's a permaculture experiment you've tried that went hilariously wrong? Not that it was funny in the moment. And what did it teach you about working with nature?
Well, I couldn't say it went hilariously wrong, but you know, we've tried to keep bees for years and we failed and we quit because we can't figure out why we can't keep them. And that's real sad, actually. It's not hilarious. And
Right.
I can't actually think of a fail that I've had that was pretty funny right off the bat. I'm sure there are some. But the big fail that was really sad for us was having to give up the bees with so many apple trees and raspberry. I mean, we have huge, you know. They just are such great pollinators. That was really hard one is
Maybe
to
ridiculous is be a better word than hilarious because ridiculous doesn't always mean it's funny.
we could we yeah we tried everything. We don't know if it's the mites, we don't know if it's the chemtrailers dropping so much poison that's killing off the plants that they you know that they love to
and then
pollinate.
all the monocrops, they're all sprayed with Roundup and all of the, it's probably a conglomeration of all of the above because
Probably.
a healthy swarm of bees won't get mites. There's a reason that their systems are weakened, just like more so down south where you live. But a lot when you go up into like Garden Valley, and you'll see a lot of the trees are turning red, and that's because they had they say it's a beetle, and but why is the tree getting attacked by a beetle? All of a sudden, all of these trees are just dying, and if it is truly a beetle and it's not the chemtrails, I know we're getting a little off subject here, Why are the beetles attacking the trees? Why is there all this die off all of a sudden? And you have to think, perhaps it's more than just what they're saying. It's not just the beetle, it's not just the mite. It's because the system of the organism is weakened, and what's weakening it. And I think you hit it right on the head. The chemtrails, the chemical petrochemicals that they spray, goes into the water systems. And so we are building our new earth together in community, and so we're going to get beyond this. It's not going to be a disaster movie in the end. So
No.
we both know that permaculture isn't just about gardening. We've talked a lot about gardening. It's actually a whole lifestyle. It's the systems for the whole way you live. What's one way you've woven permaculture into your daily routine that's made life more awesome for you and others that you are close to?
Well, feeding myself good food is the primary mo motivation and reward for using permaculture practices. It's really important to me what I feed myself, what I feed my body, what I feed my family. And I mean, to me, it's just a no-brainer, but if we all are 100% dependent on going to the grocery store for everything we eat, to me it's very sad. You can still find some decent food. You really have to look for it. Farmers markets have helped to relieve that problem. We have lots of farmers markets here in this valley, and we have lots of organic gardeners who are doing a great job of providing very high-end beef, chicken, eggs, vegetables, fruit, you know. So being able to go and participate in purchasing really high-quality food is really important to me to shift that. You know, to bring the shift into the consciousness of everybody. I know it's not, I know a lot of people aren't able to afford to go do that because it, I don't know why or growing organic is more expensive, but
Right,
it is.
you don't have to buy all the
You know
chemicals
what I
and
mean?
crap to put
It
on
is, and
it.
it's a sad fact, but that to me, growing my own, you should see my greens right now. It, I mean, I don't have enough customers right now to purchase the amount that I'm growing. So
I bet you're eating a
that's
lot of salads.
lots of greens. It's just wonderful. Yeah, so I think that's my main thing.
Something that you said when you were talking about the farmers markets and the beef, we have that up here too. Grass-fed beef, people that are foraging their pigs. I don't eat meat, although I do make bone broth. But I have to tell you, I don't know if it's the same down there, and I don't know if it's the same for anybody else in our audience. I went to the farmers market at the end of the season last year with my sister and her husband. And I wasn't really in the market to buy anything. I did probably end up buying a few things. But the farmers market here in Coeur d'Alene has become ridiculously expensive. It used to be the other way around, that the farmers markets were there to support the community that helps support them. And now it's a kind of a sad turn around that they're just hopping on the bandwagon of, trying to make a buck, which everybody needs to. But again, why is it ex so expensive to buy organic produce when you really don't have to buy all the stuff that they have to buy, that you have to buy to grow conventional. It's just a quandary for me.
Well, I will chime in on that to the best of my ability. If it's a mom and pop deal and just two people, and they are growing enough to come to a Saturday market, and they are harvesting all that, they're transporting all of it, they're keeping it fresh until it hits the market. And most of them have to travel. They don't live in the city. They need to come from an area. So there can be a lot of contributing factors to grow organically. It does not cost that much. If you're doing the chop and drop with pea shrub grows great almost everywhere.
Is that the
And
same thing as fetch? VETCH? Because
no.
it grows crazy up here.
No,
It's
I
a
don't think
wild pea
so.
shrub. No?
It might be that. It might be that.
Purple
But
flowers?
the thing is just to find the things that you can grow in a little section of your and grow your own fertilizer. So you don't even have to go out and haul dairy compost or have it delivered. It's expensive. Buying compost from a reputable, good place is expensive. So that's why you need the animals. That's why you need to have chickens. That's why you need the red wiggler worms because they create fertilizer for you. So there are a lot of costs involved in growing food on a larger scale, but it seems to me like it's very trendy now. And if these people are, if that's what they're dependent on for their income, yeah, they've got to make money on it.
Yeah, I
It
get
would
it.
be nicer to have a little bit more trade and bartering. And I'm sure a lot of those people that go to those markets do trade and barter with other people. You get to know all the vendors.
I do that to a certain extent. I make kombucha and I trade with my nephew for eggs. He's the one that has the 5 acres. He's probably got about 25 chickens.
Yeah.
And we both bake bread, and so I do barter some, and I would love to do that more. I know Sunshine from Whiplash Talk is talking about starting some bartering kinds of enterprises, and Teresa on All Learning Reimagined has her bartering barn that she wants to start. So I think going forward in community, bartering will be a huge thing. All righty, let's continue with some permaculture questions. Let's see. How about if you could wave a magic wand and get the whole world to adopt one permaculture practice tomorrow, which one would it be, and how do you think it would make the planet a better place?
The magic wand that I would want to sprinkle the fairy dust around is get serious about your own sustainability. Because it's you in if as a species on this planet we don't shift our mindset about being dependent on the systems that are failing us right and left, we're not going to evolve to a place where we can create a community, gather enough people who want to get serious about. I am a living example of it, and I may not be trying hard enough to gather people that want to come and help me grow and harvest and preserve the food that I'm able to grow. But until people do get the bug, I guess maybe they have to catch the bug that, oh, I could be doing this and that and the other. It's about changing your mindset. I think that's the number one thing. I mean, we've talked about you don't have to have a big piece of property. You can get pots. You can have an urban setting where you lasagna garden on top of grass, and when one season you have a garden. I think that's what our main goal, you and me, Bo, is to help get people inspired that it's not that hard. It's not that hard at all to get started. And just start and then see if you want to get bigger and bigger. But you have to change something in your life to incorporate something new on that level.
It's a lifestyle change that we, I don't know how many times I've had to have lifestyle changes in my own life.
I know, but I think even lifestyle is too big of a term. I think it's more of a life habit change because
Okay.
our habits dictate our routine during the day. I mean, let's all be honest. I've got my own. We all have our habits. We all have our routines that we love, and there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes a lot of our habits are not super beneficial. They're just something we've gotten used to.
Right.
And I have to admit, I am as guilty as anybody. I can get on my phone and start scrolling on to my different favorite places. And before you know it, I've spent a whole hour and I have accomplished not one thing. So I'm guilty too of using time that could be. So I don't know. It's just check yourself. See if everything you're doing is working for you. If not, what can you change to bring something new in? Doesn't mean it's going to be a success, but until you try, you won't know.
A little off topic, actually quite a bit off topic. Did we mention our Facebook page on our last show with Dawn?
We did.
Okay. Vicky's on Facebook. I'm not. So Vicky's the orchestrator of that. And I will be sharing some photos and what have you that I'm going to be taking. But yeah, Facebook is it's just called Down and Dirty.
It's exactly like our BBS, Down and Dirty with Idaho Beau and Vivacious Vic on Facebook.
Okay.
And I am posting the archived podcast. Every time the archive comes up, I post the link so you can go right on there. And yeah, and lots of articles, lots of photos. Yeah.
Yeah, and we're going to keep writing our articles. So, what else can you bring to the table besides the greens? To talk about permaculture, just whatever you can think of off the top of your head, not a question from me. Just what do you feel is like, okay, I'm asking you a question. I just said I wouldn't, but what do you feel is the importance of permaculture in humanity going forward? I know it's a big question.
Okay, well, let's dissect what permaculture stands for. Permanent, perma, culture. So it's the earth. So we are creating sustainable earth stewardship, right? Which is, that's certainly what I have dedicated a great portion of my life to, and I know you have too. So becoming a steward of the earth means you are taking care of your own little spot that you inhabit, whatever that is. It's different for everybody. And so are you being a good steward? I mean, these are the ch questions that we have to actually ask ourselves. Can I do something more to enhance my space? Am I doing something wrong? Is stuff unhappy here? It's not growing, it's not producing. It's like there's no bugs, there's no pollinators. I mean, these are the things we have to notice and pay witness to what we've created around us and what we surround ourselves with. So it, in a nutshell, it's becoming conscious of our surroundings. And what can we do to enhance it and make it more beautiful, more sustainable for our happiness, more healthy for our children and our animals? It's about witnessing the results of how we're living as individuals, as families, as communities, as a nation, as a globe. You can start small or go to infinity of just witnessing what's going on around you, and how can I become a better steward and a better make a different offering if it's not working for you now.
So one of the things you just mentioned reminded me that one of the first things in permaculture that you want to do is witness, is observe. And in permaculture, and correct me if I'm wrong, Vicky, one of the things it talks about is paying attention to the place you are, be in the moment. And observe for at least 6 months before you really do start working on your land. And I can give you a very good example. I moved in to an apartment in Boise and it had a little patio area. And I moved in late fall. So there was a tree in this little patio area. It's very, very quaint. And all the leaves were off of it. I didn't know what kind of tree it was. I didn't really know. I was pretty new to Boise at the time, and I didn't know what kind of tree it was. And me and my little gardening mind, I at that point I was more into ornamental gardening, like the flowers and all the things like that. And so throughout the winter, I planned this really beautiful little garden. And first thing in the spring, I went out and bought all the plants and planted them. And then the leaves on the tree started coming in, and it was a catalpa tree. And Vicky knows catalpa trees, they're absolutely gorgeous. They have these great big heart-shaped leaves. They're just beautiful. And they have the most beautiful flowers with the white flowers with these little purple centers, and they're just gorgeous, but they create a lot of shade. And the plants that I put in were all sun plants. And so I lost almost every single plant. And that was because I didn't take the time to observe what I was given. And that goes back to what you were saying before, work with what you have. I was not working with what I had. I was actually doing whatever I wanted to put in, and it didn't work. And so, yeah,
Yeah,
that observing
very
is
good.
very important, and that can be translated into your everyday life, is observe
Yes, yeah,
everything before you make a move.
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah, we have a little bit more time. Is there anything you want to touch on?
well, I love the experience of my permaculture training, and it's fun because now that we're doing this show, reflecting on that experience, and there's book learning, there were guest speakers that came. One of them was from Canada, and he, there was some talk about creating a greenhouse type environment. We're at 7,200 feet on the side of the Rocky Mountains. And then he's from Canada, where the nights are long, the days are short, and in the winter. And I think he was from Alberta, Calgary. And he was talking about it's not necessarily how much sunlight you get, it's how much light, period, that you get. And they dig down. They do the, is it called a Wapiti greenhouse, where they dig down deep below the
Yeah.
permafrost? And then they put a greenhouse roof on so that you can kind of, I learned so many things, and I've always wanted to build a greenhouse like that. I haven't done it yet, but I don't know that I will, but I loved learning these new things. And all of these things can be adapted. You don't have to do them exactly. This is the thing about human creativity, is we get an idea and we think we have to do it just like that. But then, no, as things evolve, we evolve the systems and the techniques to adapt to our life, to adapt to our property, to adapt to our region. And that's the fun of it, is learning new things, and then, oh wow, I could do that, but I don't quite have this, but I could do it this way. And it's really fun to learn to see what you create with what you've got. And I learned a lot of those kinds of the chicken tractor. The chicken tractor is so brilliant because it keeps the chickens safe from predators. You move it around, they dig, they do pest control, they fertilize, they churn up the little bit of the topsoil, and then they do all the harvesting once you've got all the stuff off of like your tomatoes, and you chop them down, they're done for the season. Put the chicken tractor in there. I mean, there's so many simple little things that I have been able to reflect on from that experience that are very meaningful, very practical, and very, very doable.
You want to address food forests real quickly? We have probably about another 5 minutes.
Good for us.
Food forests.
Oh, wow.
Do
Well,
you
that.
remember? Do you remember? I can't remember the guy's name. I think his first name was Tom. We went over to his house years ago, and he had a food forest in his front yard. It was absolutely gorgeous, and he had one of the underground greenhouses like you're speaking of, and he used to have people over and he would give classes. But food forests, you plant, so things come up at different times and you harvest one thing and then the other thing grows up taller. There's so many systems within permaculture that work with the land instead of against it. And I think probably one of the biggest things that we talked about today is the chop and drop, because that's very important.
It is.
Fertilization, yeah, and utilizing what you have on your land. And you do have a lot of comfrey.
I do have a lot of comfrey. If anybody ever wants any,
Yeah,
I've got it. You can chop it or you can take a start.
anything else? Well, I mean, even in your front yard, you've got an espaliered pear, you've got goji berries. That's kind of like a little food forest in your front yard. And right now, your red hot pokers, which aren't edible, but they're absolutely gorgeous. Yeah.
The food forest is a really nice thing that he did in Boise. We're the city of trees, and he had a lot of tall trees, and then around the bottom of all those trees he had different layers and different light depending on the exposure at different times of the year. And then of course the heavy mulching. It's another technique that really is very, very powerful for water conservation. And you find the symbiosis between these different plants. They feed on one another. They help naturally fertilize each other. They naturally do pest control. And you've got almost year-round food with those kinds of, It's very, very beautiful. And he did the biochar too. Remember, he showed us, he had his barrel, and he had so much branches and things that he would harvest, and he let it dry out, and then he'd make his own biochar, which is a whole nother subject. I've never done that, and I've never really worked with that, but that's also a very powerful feeder for plants.
And then we took a field trip out to, I can't remember where it was, but the guy that had the big lot, and he had hula culture. He was doing he's doing all the permaculture. We could do another whole show on permaculture, different aspects of permaculture, different systems. But I think, we're probably getting close to wrapping up. Is there anything you'd like to close with, Vic?
No, just do it. Don't be afraid. Go out, explore, and express yourself, and don't just do it. Just
Just
pick
do.
one thing. You just pick one thing and go out and try it. See how you do with it. It's fun.
It is fun, and it's addicting.
Oh,
You were
yeah.
talking
Yeah.
about in the beginning of making a commitment. If you just start, just one seed, just one seed, you just start, and
Yeah.
you will be captivated for life. You will never ever be bored if you start a garden and then build on that, grow on that, and
Yeah.
get down and dirty.
Get down and dirty.
I
Thank you
think
for
that's a good
sharing.
place. I think that's a
Yeah.
good place to wrap it up. I love you so much, Vic.
I love you too, and thank you everybody for stopping by.
We'll see you next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah.